jewishhour.com.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got a great show for you today. Just an indication. So a woman sits down in an airplane, and she notices the woman sitting next to her has a very large diamond. And she says to the woman, "That's a beautiful diamond." She says, "Why, yes, it's the famous Greenberg diamond." She says, "The Greenberg diamond? I've never heard of the Greenberg diamond." She says, "Yes, it's very famous. The only problem is that it comes with a curse. The Greenberg curse." And she says, "What's the Greenberg curse?" And the woman says, "Mr. Greenberg." My board op just fell on the floor laughing. Our guest today is Michael Krasny, who's a radio personality in San Francisco, who wrote "Let There Be Laughter, A Treasury of Great Jewish Humor and What It All Means." This is going to be a fun show. We've done shows about what's Jewish music, what's Jewish food, what's Jewish art. I've always wanted to do a show, What's Jewish Humor? So we're going to do that, and hopefully Michael Krasny will entertain us and educate us about that. We have a wide sort of Jewish music sprinkled throughout the show. The portion of the week is the portion of B'Shalach to be found in Exodus chapter 14 and following. And unbelievable Hasidic story. This involves two Rebbes, not one, but two Rebbes, all the way at the end. You'll want to stay all the way till 11:58 on the hour. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A female Arab terrorist rammed into a police car and guard post at the entrance of the town of Adam, north of Jerusalem, wounding three soldiers. The injured woman was arrested and taken to Adassa Hospital. Pakistan ordered Hafiz Saeed, accused by the U.S. and India of masterminding the 2008 attacks in Mumbai, to be placed under house arrest. That attack killed 166 people, including nine at the local Chabad house. The move came after years of pressure from both the U.S. and India. Israel approved plans for another 3,000 new homes in the West Bank, in addition to the 2,500 units they approved last week. Most of the units are in existing cities. Congress passed legislation cutting funding to the U.N. until the U.N. resolution against Israel is rescinded. President Trump has not said if he will sign the bill. In some disheartening news, there were 18 more bomb threats at JCCs around the country this week, bringing the total to 65 in the last 3 weeks. The callers use voice disguising and technology to make it look like the call is coming from that JCC, so they can't even trace the call. The FBI is investigating this quite seriously. And finally, England reported a record 1,300 incidents of anti-Semitism in 2016, 30% higher than 2015. 107 of those incidents were involving assault, meaning physical abuse, the highest ever, and over 1,000 were verbal and written anti-Semitic abuse. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. I have online Dr. Michael Krasny, who is a professor of English literature in the University of California system. Just recently, is also a radio personality in San Francisco. Just came out with a book called Let There Be Laughter, A Treasury of Great Jewish Humor and What It All Means. So with no further ado, welcome, Dr. Krasny. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank God. Thank God. So as I spoke about in the introduction to the show, we've done shows about defining Jewish music, Jewish art, Jewish food. So now we're going to do, I've always wanted to do Jewish humor. And the thing is about when you analyze humor, it suddenly doesn't become funny anymore because you're analyzing it to see why it is funny. And therefore, if you have to explain the joke, it's not. So, but there's a, just as there is in Jewish music and Jewish art and Jewish food, there's a wide universe of it. So too also, I would say there is a wide universe of Jewish humor. But is there a point of equanimity between, say, Myron Cohen and Jerry Seinfeld, for example? Yes or no?
A qualified yes.
That's why we're here.
There's a lot of irony, and there's a lot of a sense of looking at the world through an ironic lens, if you will, that I think could be said about both Myron Cohen and Jerry Seinfeld. A lot of Jerry Seinfeld's humor, I think, is different in that it's evolved through assimilation and through having been in America a lot longer in terms of generations than Myron Cohen. But when they look at the world, they look at it through a very funny perspective that seems to be pretty identifiable as Jewish. When Myron Cohen says, for example, this man falls down in Miami Beach and they call an ambulance and the guy puts him on a stretcher and says, are you comfortable? And he says, I make a living. You know, this goes back a little more to the shtetl and to Ashkenazi Jewish connections. Seinfeld, there's a lot of joking about things that are recognizably Jewish. There's a lot of joking about rabbis, some of it fairly lampooning and almost absurd about moils, about things of that nature. So we see it evolving, but it still has a very similar kind of ironic twist to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, in Jewish music, for example, we kind of identify Jewish music as having been like in a minor scale, and even the upbeat music has a sort of like somberness to it because it's coming from the shtetl originally where life wasn't really great. Is there seems to be that sort of like what makes Jewish humor funny is sort of like the irony about it, the satire, the situation. Could you explain that, please?
Well, it's also the willingness to laugh at life and laugh at oneself that has come out of many centuries, if you will. I try to trace it back and, in fact, find some roots in the Bible. But also, in America, it takes on a different form. I like to use a number of examples that show that shtetl humor has pretty much surfaced in American Jewish humor, and it's still embedded in American Jewish humor. It's a way of looking at life with, we go on and we survive in spite of what the circumstances might be, but also it can even make fun of pain. It makes fun of loss. It makes fun of some very serious kinds of motifs that get us to the heart of really the whole Jewish experience. It's not to say that it hasn't become de-Semiticized, because in many ways it has, but there's even joking about assimilation. You know, there's joking about secularization and those kinds of things. So it's really the human condition, but it's a human condition looked through a very different kind of prism.
Okay, so there's been like this renaissance of all these other Jewish medium that we've been talking about, art, music, etc., where people are like, people are trying to go into Klez camp to pick up Jewish music, and they're going to Yiddish camp to pick up, to speak Yiddish again, like their grandparents or great-grandparents did. There's a resurgence in deli pickles and pastrami and gefilte fish. Are we seeing, is there a possibility that there's such a thing happening in Jewish humor as well then, Michael Krasny?
Boy, I would welcome it, Herschel. You see, I've done a lot of appearances with this book, and what's been heartening is a lot of the young people have shown interest, and it's as if they want to know more. Many of them know very little and have learned a lot from my book. I don't mean that to be self-promotion, but it's true, and it's been heartening. There's a joke that I really fancy. There are a lot of jokes in this book. There's a lot of anecdotal material, a lot of Jewish humor material, extraordinary amount, in fact, packed into one book. But there's a joke which you or some of your listeners may know about a man who's walking in the middle of the 21st century, and he's walking with his really good-looking son, and someone walks up and says, your son is a really handsome boy. He says, thank you. He says, what's his name? He says, his name is Shlomo. He says, Shlomo? What kind of name is Shlomo? He says, well, he's named after his dead grandfather. His name was Scott. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that's embedded in that joke about the hope of resurgence, because the name Shlomo is right out of Yiddishkeit and out of the shtetl. And jokes do give us kind of vectors to different sorts of meaning, even including a hopeful joke like that. But it's also a joke about Jews assimilating so much that they take names like Scott. And it goes back, and it has the hope embedded in it.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So, but the difference with music, for example, is okay, if I'm into music and I know the difference between a D major scale and a D minor scale, the joke that you said before about the guy getting in an accident and the someone saying, are you comfortable? And the person says, I make a nice living. People don't use that expression anymore. When I was growing up, so in Newark, I heard this, he's very comfortable. So if I told my kids, he's comfortable, they would think, well, he's got a pillow? I mean, so there's that loss in expression and in jargon that seems to be directing Jewish jokes. So now, just like you have, for example, there really is nothing in common between the songs that Avram Fried sings and the songs that Mickey Katz sang. Yet we're going to call Avram Fried, well, he's now Jewish music, even though it's in a major scale and it's upbeat and he's just like dancing and jiggling all over the place and Mickey Katz didn't. So what now then are we going to look at and we're going to say, this is Jewish humor rather than just say like a Jew telling jokes?
Well, some of the young comics that I've studied, Sarah Silverman and Amy Schumer, who's half Jewish but identifies strongly as Jewish, even Chelsea Handler, they don't necessarily use Yiddish or Yiddishkeit because they don't know it. They're unfamiliar with it. And that's true for so many of the younger comics. They're kind of culturally deprived. It's like, you know, somebody not having a background, you're using the analogy of music, not having a background in music and knowing, you know, mainly rock and roll or jazz even, and not knowing classical music and not having an awareness of it. And yet some of that comes in and nevertheless colors the way they see the world, it seems to me. That's what I was getting at before. To make them aware of just what you pointed out, that is the irony through the Yiddish locutions or through the Yiddish expressions of something, they have to be educated. And it's one of the things I wanted to do in this book, because I'm an educator. I'm a scholar, but I'm also an educator. I wanted to really... So many people had come up to me through the years and say, what do I do about my grandkids and everything? They just don't understand this. They don't get it. They don't have any sensibility that will link them or connect them, and they don't even have the frame of reference. So the book is an attempt really to largely, in many respects, bring enlightenment in that way. The loss is also a source of humor, strangely enough. I mean, a lot of the jokes that you find are... the classic joke about a guy who wants a bracha said over his Mercedes, and he asks an Orthodox rabbi to say a bracha over his Mercedes, and the rabbi says, I don't know any brachas over Mercedes. Go see the conservative rabbi. So he goes to the conservative rabbi. Conservative rabbi says, I'd like to help you, but, you know, I don't know a bracha for any cars at all, let alone a Mercedes. Goes to the Reform rabbi, and the Reform rabbi says, what kind of Mercedes, and what's a bracha? It's a painful joke in some ways because it also lampoons and makes fun of the Reform, but it's saying they don't know what a blessing is. They don't know what a bracha is. They're out of that connectedness to Judaism, and there's also that lack of connectedness that, frankly, we have to sort of deal with, those of us who are tied to our sense of Jewishness, to the old world and so forth, that has pretty much gone. I could have written a book that was an elegy, but I wanted to write a happy book and an upbeat book.
Indeed. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Michael Krasner, who's written a book, Let There Be Laughter, A Treasury of Great Jewish Humor. There seems to be like a certain milieu with Jewish humor. I was raised with the Jewish humor. My mother had the Mickey Katz records, and the Myron Cohen and the et cetera, and all those people. And I knew all those jokes. And I was hoping when I read the book that I would get some new material. But I had, I think, heard 99.9% of all these jokes already. My wife, though, was raised in a very secular house. And her house was considered highbrow. They were into discussing things like socialism and democracy and immigration and the poor, et cetera, et cetera. And her father.
A red diaper?
Pardon?
Was she a red diaper kid?
I'm not exactly sure what that expression means.
Well, they talk about kids who were brought up believing in socialism.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Socialism was going to save the world. Yes. And so they didn't, her grandfather didn't speak German, didn't speak Yiddish, and if he did, he didn't let anybody know that he spoke Yiddish. Hmm. He was part of the intelligentsia in Philadelphia, involved with the establishment of Graz College, et cetera, yada, 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 yada.
Yeah, but forgive me, that's so true. A lot of the socialists had a strong sense of Yiddish. They even had camps where they only spoke in Yiddish.
That's right, true. Indeed. Them, not. Her grandmother did not even speak Yiddish. She never played. You know, she was raised. She was born in America in the late 1800s, and went to a friend's school because there was no. The parents wouldn't send her to public school, but there was no Jewish schools to send. So she was raised by the Friends of Society of Philadelphia.
Excuse me. You want a good friends joke?
Go ahead. Let's hear.
Now, it's one that I'll bet you haven't heard, even though you may know most of the jokes in my book, because a lot of them are classic jokes, but it's one that I hadn't heard, and I thought I knew them all, too. So there are all these Jews who are converting to become Quakers in Philadelphia, and the leader of the Quaker congregation says, some of my best friends are Jewish.
Okay.
Understood. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead. No, that's fine. So for her, when she was presented with many of the jokes, especially the jokes that are kind of a little off color, she just kind of like, it just like rolled off the end of her nose. No, this is, why is that funny? It was her interpretation. So is there a sociological gap between classes that determine what's funny in Jewish humor?
Probably, yeah. I would hypothesize that and confirm that it's probably true. But also it has to do with a lot of those. It sounds like your wife's family just wasn't planted in Jewish humor or Yiddishkeit or Jewish life and so forth, and wanted to pretty much remove themselves from it. And, you know, that will obviously affect the humor and what they find funny. There are a lot of Jews who don't get Jewish humor. That's another reason why I wrote this book. I mean, you said it, you kind of hit the target before when you said writing about humor can be very serious and not necessarily that funny. And it was tough for me to navigate between telling funny stories and jokes and the like, and also trying to describe what they mean in ways that would make sense to people and that would also give them a glimmering or at least maybe an enlightenment about what was at the essence of this humor. So your wife could stand, I think, to read my book.
In education, she actually has. I think she posted from like a scholarly point and kind of just like went, yes. My wife has a wonderful sense of humor, and the humor that goes on in our house is more of the, I'm a horrible punster, but it's more the ethereal stuff rather than like the slapstick stuff is what our family seems to be gearing towards.
The humor that goes on, in like I suspect you, I've had a long marriage, the humor that goes on in this household seems to be a lot vested in sarcasm, and I don't know why I said the word that way. It sounds rather...
As opposed to sarcasm? Yes.
Yeah, sarcasm. It came out strange. There's a lot of that in this household, and a lot of it really does go back again to Jewish traditions and ways of looking at the world.
Indeed, and that's exactly the thing that my wife doesn't like. She doesn't like the sarcasticness. She doesn't like the put-down joke. If she wants to laugh, she wants to have a good belly laugh. And so are there good belly laugh, unsarcastic, unironic Jewish jokes then? And could you tell us one?
Oh, yes, there are. In fact, you know, I interviewed a lot of famous Jewish comics, and I write about it because I have a radio program, as you said earlier, and I had the great privilege of interviewing some of the greats, Jackie Mason, Joan Rivers, and Alan King, and Gene Wilder, and the list goes on. But when I interviewed Alan King, when I was writing about the interview with Alan King, I was doing some research on him, You know, he came up with this brilliant line. I always thought it was brilliantly funny about opening a Chinese fortune cookie, and inside it says, "Help, I'm a prisoner in a Chinese fortune cookie factory," mm-hmm. which also is something that extends to a mezuzah joke about opening a mezuzah and finding it. But I saw this joke, and it was so silly, and yet I had to include it with a number of other silly jokes. It wasn't actually a joke. It was Alan King performed at Windsor Castle, and afterward he met Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth, and Queen Elizabeth said, "It's such a pleasure to meet you, Mr. King," and he said, "It's a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Queen," and I thought, well, this is silly, but I loved it.
Okay, I thought you were going to tell me why is this night like any other different than any other night joke. That's which is also an old one. So you know which joke I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, that's one of the quintessentially Jewish jokes. I mean, a lot of these jokes cross over borders, and they can be told about other ethnicities and other, you know, what's Jewish Alzheimer's? You forget everything but the grudges. You could say that about Sicilians. You could say it about Arabs. I've heard it about Irish and so forth. But quintessential Jewish joke, you know, the man is being knighted by the queen. He's wearing a yarmulke. The queen says, "Why is this night different than all other nights?" I mean,
right, and well, you would only understand that joke if you were Jewish and know
exactly
that. No, at the Seder, that's how the Seder starts, the Passover Seder starts, and then becomes intrinsically. So where is Jewish humor going then? If you don't see any sort of like I've said when I told you, here's an old Jewish joke because there's no such thing as a new an old Yiddish joke because there's no such thing as a new Yiddish joke because they're not making them anymore. So where do you see, what direction do you see Jewish humor following? Are we just following the ways that like the American assimilationists, and we're going to be doomed to humor that just mirrors whatever's on Comedy Central, et cetera? Michael Krasny?
Well, like I said, I could have written an elegy. I had a revelation, revelation's a heavy word to use, but a number of years ago, A Night of Jewish Humor, which I hosted with Larry King, I almost said Oliver Shalom, but he's still with us.
He's still cooking.
there were a number of comics that were Jewish. You may remember Steve Landisberg, Rita Rudner was there, Richard Lewis. They were all of a different generation than I suspect you are and than I am. And the result was that I realized a lot of the humor, a lot of it was funny shtick and quite humor, but it really didn't have Jewish content. It didn't have Yiddish guy to it. It didn't have any of that that we value and cherish. And then Robin Williams appeared. He was here in the Bay Area. He lived here. And he knew some of these comics. And he got on stage, and he was not Jewish. Robin was not of Jewish parentage. And he started doing shtick and using a lot of Yiddish. And, you know, he really, in other words, bore in on it in ways that these young comics couldn't, probably because he was exposed to a lot more people that knew Yiddish or whatever the case may have been. And it suddenly dawned on me that, you know, there's still a kind of Jewish humor and Jewish sensibility to the humor, especially with these young comics. But how can they have in their shtick Yiddish things when, well, look, the whole nature of humor has changed in America. I mean, I recently had John Cleese on my radio show, and he was saying, he was lamenting. He said, "I can't go on campuses anymore. You know, there's too politically correct." And I've heard that from Jerry Seinfeld. I've heard that from Chris Rock. The whole notion is that you have to be very careful what you say. And I hear political comics who complain that young people don't get their jokes. They have to do, you know, the blue stuff or the potty stuff or whatever that is. And the reality is that there's a whole different kind of desire of what stand-up is and what stand-up ought to deliver. And it can't be linked back to the Catskills because the Catskills aren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Jews went to the Catskills because they couldn't get into other clubs. Now they can get into other clubs. I don't know how it's going to be under Steve Bannon, but we'll have to wait and see on that.
Indeed. Do you have a wide knowledge of Jewish jokes. Do you have, like, a favorite Jewish joke that you like to tell?
Well, there's a Jewish joke that leads off my book. My book is based on themes, and as an old literature teacher, I decided to do it that way because it made sense. And there's a chapter on Shlomo Meals, and there's a chapter on Jews and assimilation. There's a chapter on sex and marriage. But the opening chapter is all about bubbies and mothers. And all of the women I work with at HarperCollins love this chapter. They love the other chapters, too, but they love this chapter especially. And this is a joke that many people know. Writing these jokes and turning them into narrative was I don't mind telling you, a bit of an onerous task, a challenging one, because most of these jokes are told, of course. They're made to be told. I did a recording audiobook, but the book itself has just text. And the joke was originally, in fact, going to be the title of the joke. It's a joke about the Jewish grandmother who's with her grandson at the beach, and he's playing really too close to the water, and a wave takes him and lifts him up, and she's praying because she can't swim. God, save him. My nachas, my life. Lifeguard miraculously appears out of nowhere. Young, robust-looking, what you'd call a shigets, Gentile lifeguard with big muscles and everything. Dives into the water, brings the kid out. The kid is blue. He puts him down on the sand. He starts giving him mouth-to-mouth and so forth. The grandmother's still praying and shrying to the heavens and so forth. Turns to the grandmother and says, "He's going to be okay. He's going to live. He's going to be fine." She says, "He had a hat."
Yes, he had a hat. Indeed.
I was going to title the book, "He Had a Hat." I was going to honor Oliver Sacks, who I knew rather well, but I thought, no, it's just not going to work. Again, there's that question of, when you tell a joke, what's recognized, what's not recognized, and so forth.
I mean, even the title of the book, "Let There Be Laughter," it's like, sure, this is like a commandment over here that we're talking about over here. It's like taken from the Ten Commandments or "Let There Be Light," rather, from the days of creation.
Exactly, and they did a beautiful job. Again, the publisher, I have to take my hat off to them, because the book is really lovely. It looks mosaic inside. You open it up and it looks like the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one technical question. I did happen to catch your audio version of it. You did actually the reading yourself, which is very unusual that the author actually reads their own book. They usually get some kind of a professional reader to do it. So why is it that you specifically chose to do it yourself, Michael Krasny?
That's a funny story. The audiobook people who were up in Connecticut called the publisher and said, we're going to get an actor. We have to decide on who to get and everything. And they said, well, Michael's a professional broadcaster and, you know, lecturer and everything, and he would probably be interested. And then someone else called them back, and they said, we want to contact Mr. Krasny and talk to him, Professor Krasny, whatever. And I said, the publisher said, well, you know, what do you want to know about him? And they said, has he had any experience public speaking? This is a question that was posed to the publisher. I've been doing a radio program on the local NPR station for a quarter of a century. Mm-hmm. But they took a chance and didn't get an actor. And it was fun doing. We went through, did it in the Los Angeles studios. And, you know, I could do the inflections and do the what you will without being a trained actor, I thought. And we got it down. It's out. It's in the world.
Great, indeed. Okay, our guest has been Professor Michael Krasny, who has written a book called Let There Be Laughter, A Treasure of Great Jewish Humor and What It All Means. And this is from Moreau Publishers, available wherever fine Jewish books are sold, Amazon and et cetera. And we want to thank you so much in sharing insights into this and letting us know what humor is. And I hope you'll have a humorous day there, Michael.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I enjoyed it very much.
Okay, take care. Thank you so much again. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. That was fun, and I do feel my brain having got a little bigger over there with this educational aspect of Jewish humor. When I was in high school, I did take a class. I tried to get through high school as quick as possible. So if there were like easy courses, I would sign up for them. So one of the classes I took was called Comedy and Satire. I said, oh, comedy, who doesn't like to tell jokes and have a laugh? It was the hardest course I took in high school. It was even harder than the AP chemistry class that I took. It was involved so much work, and we had to decide. We would do things. We'd say, we would discuss and analyze what makes this funny. Okay, it was so hard, but it gave me a real sense of analysis. My first real sense of analysis of something is rather. It was really cool. We watched like a Buster Keaton movie twice. So the first time everybody would watch it, they would laugh. And then we knew where the laughs were coming. And we'd say, well, what happened over here that made this funny? What was this? And we'd, the various different categories it was broken into. So the book is a good book. If you haven't been exposed to Jewish humor, yes, I would say this is a book. It's more than just a basic primer, but a guide through what makes Jewish humor Jewish humor. And it's real cool. Next up, for your listening pleasure, this is Barry Weber. We've played him before. He's got a new piece out. This is called Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Omer, which means Rabbi Simon, the son of Yochai, says. Let's listen to what he says.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, This is the Nullbach Klezmer Ensemble. They're actually a German group out of Berlin. This is a piece, it's called, it's a traditional piece that goes back to the beginning of the 1800s, which isn't generally necessarily Jewish. It's more kind of gypsy-esque, Roma. It's called a Chocek, is the name of a dance. You ever heard of a Chocek? No, you didn't hear, I never heard one either until I went and investigated this one. And I think you're going to like it. Give a listen. Or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We are moving right along. Speaking of moving right along, so we went deep into the belly of the Jewish Hour music archives to come up with this next one. This is a group called Kol Ish. They are a Jewish bluegrass ensemble. And we're going to listen to a traditional Shabbos melody called Yigdal. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Beshalach. The Jews left Egypt last week. We're in, for those following along, we're in Exodus chapter 14 and following. They find themselves at the sea. And the story goes, if you follow the storyline, that the Jews were somewhere stuck on this little isthmus. Like, if must be my lucky day. No, that's an old rascal's joke. And a little rascal's joke. They're stuck on this little land mass that's like jutting out into the sea. They're surrounded on 3 sides by water. And on the 4th side is the advancing Egyptian army. Like in any such scenario, you know, you have Jews, you have opinions. And since there were basically 5 million Jews or probably 7 million opinions what to do. But they were generally broken into four camps. One camp said, we didn't come this far just to lose. We are not going back. We're going to stand. We're going to fight to the finish, which probably wouldn't have been so cool because they were slaves, raised as slaves, and you're dealing with trained armies, armed armies. Yes. Another group said, we're not going back. That's it. Forget it. It's all lost. It's all hope. We're going to drown ourselves in the sea. Third group said, well, I guess going back is better than dying. And the fourth group said, you know, it's time to pray. And giving, you know, our man Moses was, what did Moses do? Well, he was part of the group that started to pray. What was God's reaction to Moses' prayer? He said to him, basically, the expression is Vatem Tacharishin. He just basically said, could you shut up? He said, what are you praying for? This is no time to be standing and praying. Now is the time to do. I have given you instructions, because the Jews, after all, were following this pillar of cloud, probably like a big hand with like pointing in this direction or an arrow or something like that. Go this way. Yes, turn right. It was the original GPS. It was probably pretty globally positioned. Yes, now that I think about it. And the cloud was pointing, go to the sea. But not for the purpose of drowning oneself. It was to, you know, a joke might be, why did the Jews cross the Red Sea? It was to get to the other side. But that's not a good joke, because actually they crossed in a half circle and came up on the same side. But that's a topic for another lecture. The point over here is yes, praying and relying on God is very important. It is a part of who our persona is. Jews do that. We have this three times a day praying, and we're supposed to be communicating and connecting with God. And if you need something, it says to pray to God. But then it says, don't present God your bucket list. There's certain things that the Almighty gave us. In other words, there's certain things you don't need to pray for, that God do them for you. The Almighty says, listen, you're in the position. Just, you know, take one step after the other. You're not going to get from here to there unless you actually happen to walk. The old joke of a guy who's on an island. We're telling jokes today. I mean, usually don't. Guy's stranded on an island. He prays to God to please save him. And a boat comes by and says, we're ready. He says, nope. I'm waiting for the Almighty to save me. And he prays to God, and another ship comes by, a bigger one, a fancier one. And he says, we saw you and we want to save you. And he says, nope, I'm waiting for God to save me. And he prays to God, please, God, save me. And this time it's an ocean liner. It's one of these cities on water, and it's just this magnificent boat. And he says, were you here to save me? And he said, nope, I'm waiting for God to save me. What happened? The guy died. So he comes up before the Almighty and he says, I pray to you, why didn't you save me? And the Almighty said, I sent you three ships. You know, so there's times when relying on the Almighty might seem appropriate. And you'd say, like, you know, we talked about with Joseph and all those people. No, for the most part, the Almighty has already given us the tools. And like we learned in last week's portion, which was a portion of Bo, when God told Moses not to go to Pharaoh, but to come to Pharaoh, meaning with him, and that God was going to do the work, it's just that Moses had to be there to be the representative of the Almighty in the world. So when we're putting one foot after the other, it's really the Almighty who's doing it. We're not doing anything with God. God doesn't want us to do it. What we have to be cognizant of is that there are things that need to be done, all kinds of positive things. And the rule is, if something good has come your way, don't let it pass by. We're just a mere 2 months away from Passover. Oy. And the expression is, don't let your matzahs become chametz. Don't let your matzahs leaven. The word matzah is related to the word mitzvah. It's spelled exactly the same, just pronounced different. They have nothing to do one with the other as far as grammar goes. Don't let a mitzvah become chametz. If you have an opportunity to do something, don't say, who am I and what am I? That's false humility. humility. Rather, say, I'm going to do it. Just like take a lesson from Nachshon ben Aminadav, who was Moses, happened to be Moses' brother-in-law, but the first one to recognize God wants us to go that way, we go that way. And in his merit, the sea split. Speaking of splitting, we're going to be splitting shortly, but before that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Come back with an awesome Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Something about the show that you liked, that you didn't like? No problem. RabbiFinman.com. Right on the homepage, you have the contact me. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show. If you missed any of the shows for the last 55 weeks, people are into like binge things right now. So like if you're driving, say, like from Ishpeming to Hoboken, well, you can listen to Rabbi Finman all the way through if you, so long as you have winter Wi-Fi access to it. We're also available on Stitcher, as we said before. You can podcast it, all these wonderful things. You can get out, listen to the Jewish Hour on the RabbiFinman.com. We also have archived editions of other things that I do, presented in various media, which we find, or try to make, entertaining and informative. There's also the most important donations page. It's February. We're still working on December. Come on, folks. You could do it. We owe them. They're very, very patient, and we have never gone. I've made this a point. We've never gone 3 months without paying a piper over here. It does cost. It is expensive. Radio is expensive. The commercials do pay for a good part of it, but we need you to go to the computer, go to RabbiFinman.com, click on the donations page. It's very safe, very secure. You can do it in such a way that you can do it as a monthly giving. If you can't do one thing right now, do a lot of little things for the next 12 months. And we appreciate those $5 donations that come in monthly. Yes, that's $60 a year. That's tremendous. That's wonderful. So go do it. Don't like internet giving? Understood. Send your donation any amount to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48237. Again, the new address, 1725 Pinecrest, one word, Ferndale, also one word, Michigan, also one word, 48220. Okay, I'll give you the Oak Park address. No, it's 48220. We got a story. There was a rabbi, his name was Avram Yitzchak Cohen. He was a very famous, he is a very, he's still alive, old man now, when the story happened 35 years ago. And he is the leader of the Toldos Aaron Hasidim, it's called. They live in Jerusalem. He decided he wanted a little R&R, so he went off to Switzerland. While he was in Switzerland, he said, you know, I want to go visit the graves of some of the great rabbis that are buried in Europe. So they made arrangements, and they traveled by train. And there were only 8 people in his party. In order to do the communal prayers, you need 10. So one of the things that the organizer of this group had to do was to make sure that every place where they stopped off, and again, the story gives the whole list in Lezhansk and in Mezhebuzh, and these places used to be centers of Jewishness, which now are absolutely void of Jewishness, but they made arrangements to have 2 people from the locals to come and make up the 10. When they got to Krakow, the person in charge of organizing this went to go look for the 2 people that they had arranged, and they didn't find anybody. So this Rabbi Cohen said, the Ramah, the great codifier, has a synagogue here in Krakow. We'll go there. And he went there, and maybe there'll be people there. It's like the best synagogue in Krakow. So they went. There was nobody there. Suddenly, 2 yeshiva students walk in the door. They thought, what are these angels over here? Suddenly appeared. And they prayed, and they were very happy. You know, the rabbi was very happy that they came. And he said, but where do two yeshiva students come suddenly in the middle of Krakow that doesn't have a, you know, you guys look like you walk just out of Brooklyn, he said. Said, this is something we do. This is called the summer program, that yeshiva students would leave the yeshiva and travel to distant places in isolated communities to help spread Judaism. And said, we were told before we left to make sure that on this specific day that we find ourselves, they were sent to a whole area of Poland and Krakow and the Czechoslovakia, the whole area over there, that day we must be in Krakow at the Ramos Synagogue for prayers. He says, we were more surprised to see that there was a minyan here than you were. We didn't expect anybody to be here. But now we understand why the Lubavitch Rebbe months ago said to go daven here to help this Rebbe Aaron Cohen make a minyan. That's going to do it for us today. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you again back again next week. Take care.
SpeediCath catheters are prescribed for both men and women with chronic urine retention or a post-void residual volume due to neurogenic and non-neurogenic voiding dysfunction. Before using, carefully